Last night, Mike, I was on in Denver because they wanted to know what the Falcons, you know, issue was last week against the Saints. And then they wanted to talk about Sean Payton's success against the Falcons as the coach of the Saints. And so we got into this.
That.
Yeah. Yeah, bro. We got to this whole conversation. And then they said, well, what happened to Young Waku? And I had to explain, you know, that we trusted him. We still do, but that lack of trust is waning because of what happened last week. And I said, my partner said he's at 50-50 right now about heading into this game Sunday. You remember Ben Coweta, Mike? He was our special teams coach?
Yeah, that's the guy Dan Quinn hired. He had experience as a helicopter pilot in the Army.
He has taken over as a special teams coach for the Broncos. And the point is this, guys. We had a talk last night. You know, I was talking to the market in Denver there about our Falcons, and the fact is, they're as worried about their special teams after their gaffes as we are. And as much as we were saying, we hope it doesn't come down to that, because right now I think we're all kind of on edge. Mike, they're worried. They don't trust what's going on with their special teams.
I don't know if this carries any weight with Sean Payton, because you know how he is, you know, with grudges and elephant's memory. But remember, Raheem Morris, the first thing he did when he became interim coach in 2020 was fire Ben Coweta.
Oh, I remember.
Because our special teams were god-awful under him. So, it was, you know, I don't know, man. Dan Quinn was kind of doing Dan Quinn stuff last night. I think it was more Cliff Kingsbury with that game on the line. We'll get to that coming up in the Blitz. But, yeah, I mean, it's going to be – this looks like it should be a close game. I know back in August when we go look at the schedule, that's a win, that's a loss, that's a win. We thought, oh, man, Bo Nix will beat – yeah, this defense is stout. As we said, a bunch of guys – no Falcon fans even know who these guys are with a bunch of sacks.
Yeah, and then when I heard that soundbite earlier last hour when Zach Robinson was talking about, you know, first level, second level, he's talking about D-line, linebacker, secondary, and he's like, they're good, they're good, they're good.
Right?
I'm like, so how are you attacking them, Zach? That's what I need to know. What are we going to do to get the ball in the end zone? I hope we don't have any, you know, hang-ups like we did last week. I need Kurt to have a couple of touchdowns, Mike, and we need to try to run the ball. You've been saying it. I agree with you. We can't go away from that. But this may be a low-scoring game at the end of the day just because of the way they operate. And Sean Payton, again, he's not going to put Bo Nix in jeopardy. He's not asking him to throw the ball 50 times.
No, man, and I know that Bo Nix can move around in the pocket. That does give us, historically, even though it's a new defensive coordinator, a bit of trouble. So, yeah, it's kind of a funky game. It's 4 o'clock. It's out there in the mountain. You know, we talked about it yesterday, at altitude, everything comes with that. But this is one that, man, I gotta, for the first time all season, you know, guys, we don't work for the Falcons. We work on the Falcons flagship. We're not paid by the Falcons. We're Falcon fans. But that Saints game, I lost a lot of confidence in this team, if I'm honest. You know, I just thought the offense was just, they could not put the game away when the defense was giving it to them on a silver platter.
Yeah.
You know, and we couldn't do anything. So my confidence is a little shaky right now with this team getting it done.
You got the defense to give you the ball back 3 separate times and you couldn't do anything.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, what's coming up in just a few minutes?
Coming up in 3 minutes.
Caden Ellis. Is he going to be used more as a pass rusher this week to try to spark our pass rush in the D-line? We'll talk about it coming up. Let's get to an NFL Blitz! All right, so you think the Eagles have righted their ship. Here's what I do know. Jalen Carter and all those dogs up there in Philadelphia are starting to play like they did when they were in Athens. And Nick Sirianni was talking about Jalen Carter's influence, Mike, last night.
He's been playing more than all the guy. You guys would tell me, I know, but recently he's played a lot more than the other guys. I don't know exactly the snap count, but he plays with relentless effort. He plays with great athletic ability. He plays with great violence when he gets to the football. Everyone will talk about the fourth down stop, but there was a couple plays he made behind the line of scrimmage that put him in the fourth down on that drive, which was a huge stop for our team.
You know, we talked a lot about Jaden Daniels going into that one, and he was 22 of 32. You see him wince every time he tries to throw with those ribs.
Something's going on. Yeah.
Meanwhile, he was telling, you know, Dan Quinn and Cliff Kingsbury, hey, man, let me run. Dude, he's going to get killed. That's the thing about him. He does, you know, every time they go to a shot of him on the sideline, you know, you see Jalen Hurts can squat a Volkswagen. I love Jaden Daniels. I said he should be the number one pick, not just, you know, not two. But, man, you worry about him getting squished. So they got to protect him from himself. I didn't like the Kingsbury game. First off, I thought just kick the field goal. They're in that weird spot too because they've got a field goal kicker they don't trust because he's a guy they had to bring in. But Quinn went. They go for it. They run twice to the right side. They scored in the goal line going to the left side. And you mentioned, you know, Jalen Carter. Everybody blowing it up. But that was one that swung the game because the field position was great. Then Philly scored. Next, you know, it's a two possession game, and that's all she wrote for DC.
Let's hear from Jaden Daniels. This is kind of interesting because you take for granted how good these guys were or have been. Example, Kyler Murray never lost a game in high school. He started as a freshman in Texas. Didn't lose a game, right? So you get to college and you're not going to lose because we don't lose. Jaden Daniels said this after the game last night.
I don't know if I ever had a two-game losing streak, but, you know, it's just ups and downs, and you got to learn different things throughout the rookie year. Like I said, at the beginning of the season, everything's not going to be perfect, even though I would want it to be perfect. But, you know, it just comes with, you know, just playing the position, man. You got to go through some stuff. You got to go through adversity. It's how you respond. So, you know, I feel like we'll respond great. You know, we'll rest up and we'll get back to it.
I've never had a two-game losing streak.
Right.
Playboy, welcome to the NFL, Mike. I mean, this is a different animal. Jaden Daniels, I get it, but when he said that, I was like, really? Like that you're going to go through a couple of these throughout the course of your career if you last long enough. How about what Dan Quinn had to say, Mike? You know he likes doing, what is it, tough things?
I like doing tough things, hard blank with good people.
Yeah, that's it. Here's Quinn.
We knew that adversity comes, like it just does. That's our game. That's why we love it so much. There's hard parts, and tonight's hard. And in fact, I even said that, you know, the last, you know, two games, these are tough, and they test your resolve. They build some of your resilience. It's a difficult 4 or 5 game stretch, whatever it is. It also emphasizes the ability to go close it and be there at the end and go win it. And those are the lessons for us to say, to be the team, you know, we can be. Those have to go down on our terms, and we've been pretty good in that spot. And so over the last 2 weeks, not to finish, and that's not one side of the ball. You know, that's collectively, you know, finding that blood in the water and say, we're going to go end this thing.
Yeah, it was 12-10 when Washington tries to go for it on that fourth down. It would have been like, I think, a 44, 46-yard field goal. And then Philly just goes right down the field. Saquon Barkley, Carl, he has not looked this good since he was a rookie. You know, all world incredible for the Giants. He's right behind Derrick Henry. He's already over 1,000 yards. You see when he scored that second touchdown, he sprints down the sideline. He is so like, hey, Giants, eat a bag of blank. You know, he is just showing the world that he is that guy and deserve that contract.
I'm with you. This is the fourth down you were talking about. And then we'll get to some other things, including Caden Ellis being used in the pass rush. This was the stop that changed the game.
Daniels is back. He's being chased. He's running. He's being pushed. He's knocked out of bounds. The Eagles take over on downs. The Eagles take over on downs.
Yeah, you said it. He's going to get killed. And if you didn't see that play, he got smacked out of bounds. Meanwhile, Mike, let's talk about Caden Ellis. How many sacks does he have this week? How do you use him? Do you move him all around? We've been saying this. I think this is part of the plan to create some more pressure. But it just hasn't paid off quite yet.
Well, he's a guy. Remember when we first interviewed him? It was 2 years ago. We got signed as a free agent. We brought in Onyemata. We brought in Caden Ellis. He had had 7 sacks with the Saints. And I know it was Ryan Nielsen's defense last year. That's why I remember I asked you yesterday, what's so different from Nielsen and what Jimmy Lake is doing? Because this is a guy that has shown the ability to get on the – walk him up to the line or just let him just outright blitz and let him commit to it.
Yeah, we've had – okay, what was it? It was Baker Mayfield, right? We didn't get him on the ground. Carr, we didn't get him on the ground. And now we're playing even a more mobile guy in Bo Nix, who I think is more athletic. Right. Some people say sneaky athletic. I don't think it's sneaky. I think Bo Nix has always kind of been this elusive dude. Do we get him on the ground?
Well, we couldn't get friggin' Andy Dalton on the ground. You know, when he was in there for Carolina. I mean, Caden Ellis has got a sack. You know, I mean, unless, you know, take a page from the old Dan Quinn. We just talked about Dan Quinn with the Commanders. Start blitzing some corners. Send some safeties up there. You know, I mean, I know it's difficult to, you know, can Bo Nix diagnose what's going on if there's a safety low and not 2 safeties high? I don't know. But you've got to come up with something. You know, I don't know enough about Jimmy Lake to start crapping on it, but I don't like what I'm seeing. You know, I mean, I get it. They did tighten it up against the Saints. We talked about it. I mean, hey, they made a mistake. They didn't realize that, you know, Valdez-Scantling could do what he did, I guess. They put A.J. Terrell on him. They shut it down. And it is bend, don't break. But at some point, I'm still confused at what we're doing sometimes in the first half. Remember we talked about it yesterday? Mark Grimondi brought it up. Falcons give up a lot of stuff in the first half and then literally tighten it up in the second half.
Yeah, they do. The adjustments have been great, but
Don't dig that hole, right? Don't dig that hole.
Yeah, that's been the issue. Hey, one other thing as we're talking about what's going on around the NFL, we hadn't really discussed this because I don't think it's going to happen. But can the Chiefs actually go 17-0?
You know, why not? When you're, well, you know, some people say, yeah, with the refs on their side, they can do anything. But, you know, this one in Buffalo, if you missed Bryant McFadden last hour, talking about all the injuries to the wide receiver core, you know, for the Bills. And obviously they've circled this date for some get back. Carolina, they got divisional opponents. Maybe Raiders, maybe Chargers would be a good chance. Chargers defense getting after it. And the Vegas Raiders always play them tough. Remember, they beat them 27-20 back in Vegas back in October. Cleveland, Houston, Steelers. Woo! Steelers, baby. Christmas Day for big the one. Chiefs. Maybe that's the one you think. That's where if they are. And by the way, if they're undefeated by that one, and then does Andy Reid do what Caldwell did with the Jets years ago, where he said, screw the perfect season. Let's rest our guys. You know?
You're right.
So
because
I don't know.
Because at that point, you're talking about home field advantage being way more important and having your guys healthy. Either way, we haven't discussed it. You know, we always have a team that's 8-0, 9-0. Right. We are talking about the Chiefs, the defending two-time Super Bowl champions with the best quarterback in the NFL. Are they going to go undefeated?
Well, I do.
404-726-0929. You guys can hit us up. Follow Mike. He's Mike Bell, ATL, and I'm at Put Him Up. See Dukes, the radio show. Dukes and Bell, 929. Follow the radio station at 929 The Game. What were you going to say, Mike?
No, I'm just saying. I know that Mercury Morris just passed away. We're starting to run out of 72 Dolphins. I know Larry Zonka's still kicking. So, I mean, they always get together, pop the champagne. This one might get them a little tight. You're right.
Coming up, the key to Saturday night in Athens, and it comes down to one thing. Find out what it is next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is Dukes and Bell on a Friday, guys. Look, Dogs Vols on Saturday night is a huge game, and it's always a big-time game when both teams are ranked. This is another top-10 opponent that the Dogs are going to be playing. But, Mike, I truly believe that this simply comes down to the line of scrimmage. Ole Miss beat them up last week. 9 tackles for loss, 5 sacks. I mean, we could go on and on. And if you don't think that this Tennessee defensive line is good, just ask around the SEC. Kirby's talked about it all week. They're edge rushers. James Pierce, 5.5 sacks, 7 tackles for loss. Joshua Josephs, they have guys up front that can get it done. And I just think this is going to come down to whether or not the O-line can get them blocked. And then on the opposite side, Mike, can you stop one of the most dynamic running backs in the SEC and certainly in the country for the Tennessee Vols?
You know, that's the thing. We talked about it earlier, and it's just – it's very frustrating for Dog fans. By the way, everybody, first things first, they're frustrated about the way the rankings came out. Well, then do something about it. You know, you beat Tennessee, then all that stuff goes away. Everyone saw these projections of, oh, Tennessee would get Notre Dame, but relax. Just beat Tennessee, you'll be fine. Now, beating Tennessee, therein lies the rub because, yes, they're really good running the football. And the way Georgia's linebackers looked against Ole Miss, and more of that was in pass coverage, you know, than it was as far as the run game. But you're right. I mean, we thought that, if we're honest, you mentioned Sampson, who's been unbelievable, you know, with 1,100 yards for Dylan Sampson. That's what we thought ETN was going to be. And ETN's not even going to play in this game. So Georgia not having the star depth at running back. And that's why I said earlier, I know it's kind of crazy, and I'm not trying to be a provocateur, but you may have to rely on Carson Beck slinging that Jesse around on Saturday night.
He might have to. Dogs beat Tennessee last year 38-10, but that was last year. And, you know, going into this game, I do not expect the score to look like anything like that. Now, if it does, great. Again, that means good things have happened. That means probably you got, you know, a block kick or a pick six or something crazy, Mike, and you were able to expand on the lead. But I just don't see that with the way this team has been playing. So, to me, that's what this comes down to. And Josh Heupel's going to have his guys ready. The whole thing right now is whether or not E.O. Maliava is going to play on Saturday night. He is questionable, but the bottom line is I still think he's going to end up playing because of the magnitude of this game. And the Vols defense have yet to allow 20 points in a game. So are you telling me the Dogs are going to score 30 in a game where this defense hasn't allowed 20 in a game?
No, I'm with you. Look, we never bet against the home team on this show, and believe me, I need winners because I'm stinking it up the last 2 weeks. But I really like Tennessee getting the 10. You know, or 10.5, depending on your book. But, I mean, I do think it's going to come down to a field goal. It's going to be less than 10 for sure.
I think so, too. 404-726-0929 as we continue to talk about Georgia. By the way, they scored 10 points, speaking of 10, last week. That was the lowest output since week one of 2021. So you got to go back a few years since the last time Georgia's offense was held to 10 points. I don't think that'll be the case this week, but again, if you score over 20, then you're probably winning this game. And that's because this defense has been stingy in the red zone.
But you feel that when you look at this game and you say, does Kirby come in there and go to Bobo and say, look, you know, we're gonna ride or die with Carson Beck? You asked the question earlier, what if Carson Beck stinks it up? You know, 10 touchdown passes, 12 interceptions in SEC play. You know, when he doesn't throw a pick, they're 4-0. We get it. But it's just, to me, with the run, unless Frazier's really going to light it up and Frazier's going to shake off. You think Frazier was carrying the football all around campus today, like the program?
He should have been. He should have been. I mean, Nate Frazier is going to be the main workhorse. He's second on the team right now, 333 yards. He does have, you know, three touchdowns on the ground. But the crazy thing about this is Nate Frazier, with all due respect, was not supposed to be the workhorse. This was supposed to be a tandem of guys, Mike, whether it was Robinson, both Robinsons who are hurt, along with ETN, along with Frazier. This whole thing about running back you, it hasn't been that way for a few years now. It just hasn't. And the Dogs have not dominated the run game the way that I expected them to. And so for Frazier, yeah, this is a big, you know, he's got a big opportunity here, and I'm sure he's going to take advantage of it. And, Mike, he may shock us. He may run for a 150, two touchdowns, and everybody's going, whoa, look at how well they blocked these guys up. But I also want you to remember, they had a slew of guys in this running back room that we were all like, wow, look at this room. It's going to be crazy. They can go, you know, big guys, small guys, quick guys. All that's gone out of the window with injuries.
Yeah, and I know that a lot of folks earlier in the season were thinking about, you know, what's going to be up with Nico Iamaleava, and is he going to play, Carl? I mean, the concussion thing, that's where, you know, he's not going to be. Now, will they let him, will Heupel have the confidence to let him go and throw that thing around? Because after everything that they started with, they really did dial back their offense. Matter of fact, I heard Roddy Nabalsi on earlier today with Andy Randy saying, you know, their offense is rather pedestrian compared to what we were used to seeing with Josh Heupel. So maybe the under is the play in this one as well. You know, Georgia needs to get something cooking early. Get the lead, get the pressure on. Because tonight, we said it's a night game. Things will be going bananas. Last time Tennessee came down here, they were number one. Remember how that ended? Georgia had total, basically control of that game the whole way through.
404-726-0929. What do you guys think? We've been asking you today, and we had some great phone calls to start the show. It's really interesting because I think Dog fans, and you have a right to be. I mean, you're just a little reserved right now. You don't have your chest out like we have had in years past. It's facts. You're not walking around that way because you've seen just what everybody else has seen. But I think for Kirby Smart, these challenges, he's unique in these situations. He's unique, man. And you know, the whole Texas thing showed you again, if there's a game that he can get his guys up for and ready to play and they execute, it's situations like this, Mike. And one of our callers said, I think the Dogs should go into this, you know, thinking that that they're the underdog. Well, guess what? A lot of people think they are,
right?
Even at home.
Well, I mean, playing loose, easier said than done. Dog Nation, in their article about the game, previewing it, I didn't realize, interesting factoid, Tennessee has not been on the road since October 5th. They basically, the way the SEC, the quirk of the schedule, they've had like the last four games at home at Neyland Stadium. So, night game, Athens. I know Kirby said it needs the crowd to be elite. You really need the crowd to get up tonight. I mean, Saturday night. I don't think that'll be a problem, you know, because you'd be tailgating all day. But this is one where you really do need it. I mean, it's that we shouldn't have to tell people. But I do think Georgia fans, remember they got in their bag every time Kirby calls him out? Or somebody like a couple of years ago, somebody on, Tennessee was calling him out. Because it's never really that, it's never been a sustained intimidation. You can make some noise, but can you sustain that noise level call for four quarters? That's the question for Dog fans.
Yeah. I want to see that happen on Saturday. A couple of former Tennessee players were talking about, you know, the last time they played at Georgia because they were challenged was intimidating. Simply, they couldn't hear the snap call. You know, there were things going on that affected the game. You need that. That's what the SEC is about. You need that environment.
Hey, you know, you and I spent a lot of time this week talking about the wide receivers. Yesterday, we were talking about could the tight ends be a bigger factor based on the usage rate? Probably not. Although Lawson Lucky does have a bunch of scores, three touchdowns. You know, you look at what we thought you were getting with Arian. Can Arian Smith finally have a big statement game? He did have. Remember in the loss to Alabama, Carl, 132 yards on six catches. You know, explosive plays. That's what Carson Beck needs. You need these guys, Dylan Bell, to step up. The receivers, number one, catch the ball. The yards after the catch. Because if ever there was a big disappointment for this team, the injuries, I'm not saying you give them a pass, but the injuries in the offensive line and guys having to move around, that's part of the problem. But the biggest, to me, disappointment is the skill position players for Georgia this year.
I don't trust anybody in this receiving room. How could I? I've seen too many drops, and I've seen too many opportunities go by the wayside. I just, Mike, I don't trust them in it. This is why I'm having a hard time with the Beck conversation. I went back and looked at some of these throws that he's made in three different games, and he has dropped balls in the Alabama game early, in the breadbasket of some of these receivers. Texas, he did it early. Right. They dropped balls. And I went back and looked at all of this, and I'm going, I know the numbers don't reflect it, because at the end of the game, you still go, all right, he went, you know, 13 for whatever, and he only threw 450 yards. But there are at least five or six a game that he has put the ball on the money, and these guys have not made plays. I don't trust anybody in this receiving room. I'm sorry.
So who's going to step up? Because you're right. When you look at the touchdowns around the league, you know, I know that Georgia fans get upset. Ryan Williams got seven touchdowns for Alabama. Granted, the teams did try to take him away at times. But, yeah, Alabama coming off a big win. That's why, you know, everyone's focused on Georgia fans being so upset. You know, what happens if Alabama doesn't make the college football playoff in the first year of Kalen DeBoer?
Well, see, but here's the deal. Even though they'll be PO'd, he's going to get a break because it is his first year. Kirby's not going to get that break. Kirby has built a giant machine, and if it's not rolling into the playoffs, something is wrong. I'm not telling you by any stretch of the imagination, and it's even dumb to say this. He's not going to be in a hot seat. No, he's not going anywhere. Kirby's going to be here until he's ready to leave. But the fact is, the expectation for Kirby versus Kalen DeBoer at this point in his career at Alabama are two different things. People will be PO'd. Alabama fans will be Alabama fans. Right. But they'll also say, Mike, it's his first year, and we can deal with that.
You know, granted, they did lose to Vanderbilt, to Oren's point in my ear. Texas, by the way, there's an interesting little factoid. I saw this today, and it's out there about, you know, Georgia's schedule is obviously a meat grinder. The last time a SEC champion only had two ranked opponents on the schedule, it was like Tulane when Tulane was still in the SEC.
It's going back, yeah.
So that's kind of interesting. Look, I mean, it just, the quirk of the schedule, nobody else is ranked except for A&M. Now, again, they could beat A&M, that would make it three. But I do think that, and that game's going to be huge, man. That's one that A&M's still smarting, the physical. Physicality of it. By the way, as a guy who played with the Longhorns, it was are you worried about that A&M game at the end of the year?
Always. First of all, we hadn't seen these guys in 10 years, whatever it's been.
Right.
Since they got mad and took their ball and ran home. I said it. And so, yeah, you're always worried about this. This is just like any other rivalry game, and it comes at a time where you can't lose. This doesn't happen in September where you go, all right, it's early in the season. You lose that game, the committee looks at you completely different. Right. So it is a big spot for both teams. And for it to be at A&M, advantage, you know, obviously Aggies. But, yeah, and the whole thing about, you know, the Texas situation, Mike, when you don't play everybody in the conference, this is the issue. When you don't play everybody, you don't have division, so you can't win your division, and you don't have enough time in the schedule to play everybody, which is the case, these are the arguments that we're going to have about, well, they didn't play this team. Well, you can't every year.
Hey, man, it's an imperfect Georgia team. It's an imperfect – we got a lot of imperfection right now locally with our football. Hopefully, again, Georgia fans, Carl, we said it all week. When you get spoiled like you were in 21 and 22, this is just hard to wrap your head around.
Coming up. More dog conversation in the 4 o'clock hour. But when we come back, yeah, man, no man's next. In the game, Steve Kuhn and Hawk CEO is going to join us as well. And we mentioned this earlier. Big shout out to Chris Sale. I know many of you were hesitant when we decided to give him a shot with the Braves. He was excellent this year. 18-3, 2.38 ERA. He wins the comeback player of the year. And on November 20th, he will win the Cy Young as well. He was great, and we got to build on this pitching staff as the offseason has gotten underway in Major League Baseball, Mike.
Yeah, man, it's a great move by Alex Anthopoulos. I wasn't sure what to expect, but, man, he was the workhorse and has been money, and, yeah, he deserves it. And I know we talked about, look, Skeens was a hell of a story, and there's other guys that put him big numbers up, but nobody put the team on his back and was and more money than Chris Sale was for the Braves. Got to be.
No doubt. Let's get to Yeah, Man, No Man. Turtle, what's going on? Happy Friday, man. What's happening?
I wish it was a happy Friday, because I got some news earlier today that has really grinded my gears.
Uh-oh.
It's a phenomenon that's been sweeping pop culture, music, movies, and television for a long time now, and this time it hit home for me. My favorite show growing up is getting the dreaded reboot.
Oh.
And it does not need one. It is perfect the way it is. Friday Night Lights, the great show that premiered in the early 2000s.
Yeah, based on the movie and the book.
Based on the movie and the book, is getting another television reboot. Apparently, several networks are fighting over the rights for the TV show. The original cast members are not set to return. It will be a full reboot of the series. Clear eyes, full hearts, can't lose. But with this one, you are absolutely losing. Yeah, man, no man, are you in?
No. No, man. I mean, why? I mean, it was just on, right? It was just on. Like, it was 10, when did it go off the air? Was it 8 years ago? How many years ago did it go off?
It was a little bit longer than that. I think it was on in the it aired 2006 to 2011.
All right. Yeah, so yeah, 13 years. No new ideas, Carl. I mean, Lord knows they just recycle all that alphabet soup on CBS from NCIS and
everything
else.
People forget that show got canceled at one point, too. Like, right. And they had to do these huge movements to NBC to get it to bring back. Right. And when they brought it back, they had to shorten the seasons of it just to make it work.
Huh. By the way, you seen Buzz Bissinger lately?
No. What's he look like?
He's out there.
Okay, no, I haven't seen Buzz in a while.
I mean, he's wearing more eyeliner than Madonna. Hey, it's cool. It's his choice. He just it's definitely just be Googling it. Buzz is, we've had Buzz in studio years. He just kind of he's definitely living his best life and having fun. But getting back to the TV show, I guess. I mean, if you do it right, you can do it. I mean, they bring back everything, man. I mean, Magnum's back, Hawaii Five-O's back, all that stuff. So I guess, you know, why not?
Yeah, I don't feel one way or another because I didn't necessarily love the show. Don't get me wrong. It was a great show. But I've said this time and time again, like, that book is my high school years. Like, that is us. Buzz came to our school to interview our coaches. Like, we had one of the best programs in the state of Texas. All of that stuff, Permian, all, you know, Dallas Carter. Mike just told me he watched a documentary about all that stuff. So I never really felt any kind of way because I kind of lived that. But it was a great. It is a great book, and it is a. I think high school football, just across the country, especially in the South, is such a big deal.
Right.
And it doesn't surprise me. Listen, these networks are thinking about how do we attract people who have some of these, you know, some things in common that are interest, like interest, should I say? That's one of them. Doesn't matter what your political stance is, you know, where you go to church, you love high school football, and so that is part of, I think, trying to bring this back because they know there's a huge audience for it, but. I'm not telling you I hate it, but I'm not going to tell you I love it either.
Well, it's like what Mike just mentioned, Magnum P.I. Like, for a generation growing up, that's Tom Selleck. It's not ever going to be anybody else. Right. And for me, that's how I feel about Friday Night Lights. All right. He stepped up to the plate and defended his partner. Tony Romo and Jim Nance were on a conference call. And Tony Romo was catching a little heat about his, quote, growing pains in the broadcast booth. Ooh. When Jim Nance said, quote, hey, he sees so much and he articulates it. There's an energy level and a sound to his voice that I think reels people in. So he is subconsciously growing all the time. Yeah, man, no man. How has your stance about Romo changed since he first took over in the booth?
I didn't really think he was terrible when people started to crap. You know, they build him up, Carl, like everything else in America. They build you up and they chop you off at the knees.
Yep.
I guess maybe he got a little less detail oriented. I don't know, playing too much golf. I don't know what he was doing. But I never thought it got painful. But some people just really got, I guess they were just anti-Romo. I don't know. I think he's good. Sometimes he does kind of go a little wackadoodle and just kind of gets like me. He gets hyper, talks too fast, and just goes crazy. But I still think he's the best thing they got on CBS.
I do too. And I never understood what the pushback was when it came to Tony Romo. Listen, he came onto the scene and nobody thought he'd be any good. And then he was really good, and with the anticipation and the energy and all the things he brings. I'm not sure why everybody jumped on and said he was, you know, this, that, and the other. But my opinion hasn't changed, Turtle. I thought he was good 3, 4, 5 years ago whenever he started, and I still think he's good. I think sometimes, you know, in this day and age, Mike and I talk about this all the time, you know, all it takes is one person to, and we become misguided, right? That guy sucks. And then everybody else, well, he kind of does suck. And you don't even know why you're saying it.
Right.
So tell me what it is specifically that he doesn't do from an analyst standpoint on a Sunday afternoon that you want to turn the television off. I bet you can't tell me that. But if you jump on social media, everybody's like, oh, he's not any good. Why?
Yeah, I think the biggest criticism of him over the last couple of years has been steppage. Has been he sort of, as Mike said, gets like a jolt of, it's almost like he chugs a Red Bull during a commercial break, comes back and then starts stepping all over Jim. But I agree. I think for the most part, he's been consistently consistent. I really don't think there's much to it. But
right. Let me say this too about this partnership. He's helped Jim. Jim was getting old.
Kind of stiff.
And stiff. Thank you, Mike. He's helped Jim. So for everybody, it's like, oh, that's why Jim's defending his partner. He understands what he's done for his career. If they put someone else in there, Mike, Jim Nance might have been like, maybe it's time for him to move out of the number one spot. He has helped enhance his broadcast as well.
All right, before we get out of here, there has been a flurry of all types of celebrities on social media, of all creeds, all political sides, so it's not just one thing or the other, that are flocking to a new social media platform called Blue Sky. That they're trying to have it replace Twitter because they feel like Twitter has become too monetized-based and toxic ever since Elon Musk has taken over. Simply put, yeah man, no man, has Twitter become so foundational as the place for news, sports media news, that it's simply irreplaceable? Or do you think they could find another home?
I guess. I mean, what was the thing that stopped? Was there something that dropped a few, like, was it like 2 summers ago?
Threads.
Threads dropped. And then everyone started to profile Carl on Threads.
Because Elon fired everybody at Twitter when
he
took
and
over.
That was, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you got to stay in our lane because people get all crazy. But I just felt like Twitter was too far one way. Now maybe some people feel it's going too far the other way. I don't know. All I know is nobody's stopping me from saying what I want. I just get shut down by Twitter every 5 minutes, Carl, the last couple of years. So I'm cool with it.
Everything's replaceable, Chris.
Right. Come up with a better version that's, you know, that nowadays, I mean.
Everything's replaceable. We didn't think we'd have Twitter. Again, I know that we live in a social media world. I actually lived in the world before social media.
Right.
We didn't think that there would be something that would exist that would connect us this way, whether it was Facebook, Twitter, you pick it, Insta, it doesn't matter. But it can always be replaced. And if whatever AI does as we continue to move forward that enhances our experiences and makes it better, then that's where people are going to flock to. And so for when Twitter came out, right, I don't call it X, I call it Twitter, it was great. And it remains a source for some people, but I don't know if it's going to be the end-all of end-alls. Like, if you ask me if Twitter's going to be here in 10 years, I'd probably tell you no. Like, it may be available, but, you know, that's like MySpace. Oh, this is the best thing. It doesn't even exist.
Right.
So that's where I'm at with this. I mean, like, I don't know about the Blue Sky thing. I've heard about it. Friends hit me up because, you know, everybody's always trying to expand their social media and be like, oh, well, I need to be here. I need to be there. Point is, you know, you need to be where your audience is. You know where Mike and I are every day? Right here on this microphone.
Right.
That's where our audience is. I mean, honestly, I'm just telling you, it's not like I'm going to go to some social media site and all of a sudden we're going to get 8 million more listeners and, you know, our ratings are going to increase. That doesn't work that way for us. So I don't know if it helps or hurts, but I do think it's replaceable.
So we got ourselves a picture-perfect weekend looming. What are you guys cooking?
Hey, man. Actually, the wife's out of town, so it's me and little man tonight, Carl. I mean, that's Ike the dog. So actually, it's not very sexy, but it's simply going to be turkey burgers on the grill with some bacon.
Okay.
That's literally it. And I do like a New York-style potato salad, and they got a deli down in Tyrone that whips it up. It's Pisano. So I got that going tonight. So very, very simple deconstructor. I just want to get everything in my gullet so I can sit down. I have no idea what time this fight's going to go down tonight with the undercard. Yeah. So watch the Hawks and then over to Netflix for this Tyson-Paul fight.
They're saying around 11.
That's not about right.
Okay.
But in the old days, the whole idea of, you know, it was for you to literally go, I'm not watching. Is the fight started yet? Okay, do it. You know, right? They just, you know, that was always been the scene, you know. Yeah. But now, I mean, it's on most 90, I think 99% of our audience has Netflix, I would imagine. You're just going to go watch it, you know, so let's go.
Yeah, Chris, and I'm glad you brought that up, Mike. I'm shocked because here's the deal. When you're at these big prize fights, and this is not, I don't consider this to be one. This is an exhibition, but for all those prize fights that you know, over the last 20 years that we've gotten a chance to be at, and we were at all of them, that the buildup to that point where you knew it was going to happen, because like 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, you could be in the arena. Mike, you know this. And there's like there's this crescendo of stars and people that are showing up, and all of a sudden the energy, it starts to build. And then, like, so my point is, 11 o'clock sounds about right. What am I cooking? I think actually I'm gonna try to do some of this chili thing. I think I told you guys about a few weeks ago, only because I'm trying to prepare it for when it really gets cold. And I know it's not gonna be super cold. It's gonna be a nice weekend, but I want to learn and make sure that I know how to prepare. So I think that's what I'm gonna be doing this weekend.
All right, make sure you send your picks to @DukesandBell929 on Instagram and Twitter. We will post the best ones. Oren, hit my music.
Good stuff. Yeah, Chris has got people reminiscing about Friday Night Lights now. Mike, did you watch it regularly? I didn't.
I saw the movie. I was, because, you know, that I was not watching a lot of TV in that time frame. You know, 10 was 13 years ago. I was out, you know, on the streets, right, Oren?
Hanging out, having a good time.
Hitting the streets, man. But yeah, I mean, I love the movie. I thought the TV show, the first couple of years really popped, and then it kind of, you know, like so much writing on TV, they had a hard time sustaining it. So we'll see what this next reboot is. By the way, a lot of guys out there, Carl, and we'll talk more about this next hour. I love Mike Tyson. I've loved Mike Tyson since I was a kid when he was coming up. I just think you can't beat Father Time. I think Paul's going to win the fight tonight if we get a decision. If we got an entire generation of old farts that want Tyson to win, but he beat Anderson Silva. I mean, he's fighting a guy 30 years older than him, Logan Paul.
I know. Jake Paul.
Why do I keep calling him Logan? Logan's Ron, Logan Paul, Paul George.
RuPaul.
All Chris
right,
Paul.
Back. Paul Newman. What's Kirby's message to the Dogs as they get ready for the biggest game of the season in Athens? We'll talk about it coming up on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.